Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. When the average house or condo is bought or sold, the real estate transaction is public. When so-called luxury units are purchased, those are multi-million dollar units, according to a new report, there may be less transparency about the buyer. The Institute for Policy Studies, a 50-plus-year-old progressive think tank based in Washington, D.C., is raising flags about Boston's luxury housing boom. And this is at a time when Boston has multi-million dollar units for sale in new buildings and in future buildings. The report raises questions about whether Boston is becoming a hub for, among other things, money laundering, and whether the city's skyline is being taken over by developers who will increase land values and thus housing costs around the city. Chuck Collins is in the studio. He is an author of the report and the director of the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies. Chuck, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
And David B. Gelfer is also here. He's the CEO of the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, also called, though it doesn't match up, NAIOP Massachusetts, which represents the interests of real estate developers. Welcome to you.
A pleasure to be here.
Glad you both can be here. Chuck Collins, I'd like to start with you. This report is raising flags. I'd like you to lay them out. And then David B. Gelfer, of course, we'd like to get your response after that. So lay this out. What are the concerns?
Well, we took a look at this luxury real estate boom in Boston, which obviously has some benefits. It's it's construction jobs, it's tax revenue, it's portion of that can be pulled into affordable housing. But we raised a bunch of what we call perils, potential risks. One of them is that it contributes to growing inequality that already exists in Boston, that it may have an adverse effect on affordable housing in other neighborhoods, pushing up land values. Huge amounts of resources going into creating this luxury housing, and that's pushing the affluent into other neighborhoods, and we're seeing in neighborhoods like the Fenway in East Boston, spiraling upward costs and potential.
Well, you're saying there's a trickle-over effect, meaning that those who are not living in the high-rises are now moving into other neighborhoods that's affecting housing in other neighborhoods.
That's right. Okay. So as someone who lives in a neighborhood in Boston and has for 30 years, I've been noticing that there are obviously trends and ups and downs in the real estate market, but what's happening is there's sort of a supercharging of the current market by global capital. And this is why it's sort of a new dynamic here. So what our report looks at is who's buying these luxury units. And really in a nutshell, we looked at 12 buildings, about 1,800 units. We know that 2/3 of those units are being purchased by people who don't take a residential property exemption. So they're basically saying we're not going to take the tax break. This isn't our owner. This isn't our home. And the other interesting fact is that 1/3 of those units are being purchased by shell corporations, LLCs. Many of them incorporated in Delaware, so they're obscuring their owners.
Okay, so I do want to ask you to just clarify this. At the conclusion of this report, you said that you, the authors, have examined multiple perils of what that's a forward thing, what could happen in Boston's luxury housing boom, and that with further examination, you could uncover more information about who is buying in Boston. So is this report conclusive, though, when you say you know who's buying or actually don't know who's buying, that these are unnamed buyers?
Oh, well, yeah, we don't know the actual individuals. And in fact, in the case of 1/3 of them, they're choosing to use property ownership ways to hide or mask ownership.
So just to be clear, so the data that you have is you are saying that there is 1/3 of these units thus far purchased, however many there are, okay, that are unknown because of LLCs or whatever, yeah, whoever's doing the purchasing. So David B. Gelfer from the developer side. So developers are not new to hearing these issues, I imagine. They have not been just first raised in this report, but I imagine they've been pulled together as a flag, a large flag. Are they being spoken about by developers? And is it a responsibility for the developers to consider any of these ideas? Let's remember the city of Boston is not in this room with us, and I'm sure that there's a whole role that the city of Boston plays too.
Well, I think there are a couple things to say. First of all, just regarding the ownership factor, the fact that someone uses a trust is not a means to avoid hiding who is the actual owner of the property. Trusts are used all the time. They're used for estate purposes. My home is owned in a trust for my wife. There's many reasons to have trust. Same thing with corporations. Delaware is a place where corporations, because it's a low cost to be able to have a corporation there, but the primary purpose is not necessarily to hide the ownership. It is a means of transaction. More importantly, I think we're talking here about what is the problem. I think the problem that we have is a issue of affordable housing and lack of affordable housing, lack of middle-income housing. There's no question about that. But what we're looking at also is the fact that these high-rise buildings are producing affordable housing. There's a requirement for them to produce 15% or more, in some cases up to 50% of affordable middle-income housing. If you're developing an office building, you have linkage payments that go directly into an affordable housing fund. So we are already being taxed, if you will, for developments to produce affordable housing in the city. But for these projects going forward, those monies would not be available. As far as displacement, let's take a look at where a lot of this is occurring. For example, the Ink Block, where Boston Herald used to be. That was much more of an industrial type of area.
And that is on the, that's on the edge of the South End
South
before
right,
you go
exactly.
to South Boston.
And the Flower Exchange is a potential
right.
for expansion of that there. These are areas that have no housing, have never had housing.
But what's going up on Albany Street at the Flower Exchange, I believe, is science industry.
It's industry, but also there's going to be housing nearby and associated with that. The same thing with expansion of the areas there. Boston Landing, another area that was really basically warehousing, has been going into commercial as well as multifamily. The point being here is that we are not displacing affordable housing tenants. We are actually being able to provide housing for them, and this is a means to do it. Also, one other important point. If you didn't build these high-rise projects on a high price tag, they wouldn't be built at all because the costs of construction are so high that the only way that you can really produce something is for the high end.
So Chuck, you said this even in the report and just in here, there are some benefits to having a city in a building boom. What are you asking though of the city? I imagine and the developers to pay attention to more so. Like, what is a key thing here? Because this is the way cities grow. We know this. We know this is what is happening in New York City, in Dallas. Whether we want this city to become a high rise city is something else. It's another story, another day. But this is growth. So if the developers are not doing it, or as they do it, what do you want to see happen?
Well, I guess I would like to see more affordable housing being built, not necessarily through what John Kenneth Galbraith called the sort of the trickle down, feeding the horses to feed the sparrows, meaning we're building all this luxury housing. We hope that some of that will somehow trickle down and have positive benefits for ordinary Bostonians. I think partly because of this global capital moving in and disrupting our local market, that is going to be harder and harder. And it's interesting, you don't have to take it from me, the Boston Business Journal today has an editorial basically saying, from a business perspective, this luxury housing boom, this focus on foreign buyers is actually bad for businesses in Boston. And they echo the same recommendations in our report. This is the Boston Business Journal. Representing a segment of employers who are saying, we can't house our workers, we can't afford, our managers can't live in the greater Boston areas, our commutes are longer and longer.
Is that because of the development of expensive, really expensive condominiums, or because there may be absentee ownership?
No, it's a combination of, it's huge numbers of units that actually aren't for people to live in. Right. These are wealth storage units.
So then let's go right yeah. to this topic of what is called by you wealth storage units, absentee ownership, maybe money laundering. David, did you want to jump in here?
Let's be careful about this. The fact that people do not take an exemption does not mean that they're not living there. Now, that may not be their primary residence. For example, let's go to a high end. Michael Dell purchased a very expensive unit. He doesn't live here, but he does live
Michael
here.
Michael Dell of Dell
Computer,
Computers.
Who okay. bought EMC.
And I'm sorry, David, you are slightly off microphone. We're working to fix that, but you are definitely audible, so keep
okay.
going.
So, for example, Michael Dell is here. How often is he here? I would not say he's here 5 months, 6 months. He's probably here on a sporadic basis. Do we want to say that's wrong? We don't want to have people like him come here who have businesses and who are growing and providing enormous numbers of jobs. Obviously, we want to be able to have people like that. We have people who are basically residents of Florida now because of tax purposes who spend 5-6 months of the year here.
And the point is that people who are not permanent residents in a city don't pay the same taxes? Is that part of the issue?
That's correct. They don't get the exemption. So the city actually benefits from them. They're not getting a discount on their taxes. They're paying the full boat. But they also are being here. They are living here. We're not talking about a plethora of dark, condominiums that are across the whole city. Boston isn't one of those communities where you walk out at night and it's dismal. There's lack of people. It's an exciting city. Back in 1970s, when I started in the business,
you'd walk downtown Boston and there would be tumbleweed newspapers floating on the street and there would be no one who would be bumping into. We have a very vibrant city which is not being hurt by having a few units being sold to possibly some
Foreigners. And Miami and New York City are very vibrant cities. So let me just throw out some numbers here which came from reporting from the Washington Examiner. 30%, their reporter says, 30% of the cash purchases of high-end real estate in six major cities are by shell companies. So those are suspicious buyers. This also then trips off the Treasury Department, the Federal Treasury Department, to keep an eye on this. The Treasury Department is keeping an eye on several cities, including New York and Miami, not yet Boston. You're saying this is not a city of darkened windows. These units, many of them are occupied. Some of them, though, have been purchased by LLCs or unknown buyers, and they are empty?
Well, actually, there are many units that are bought by residents here that are bought through trusts and through corporations. Again, that is not an indicator or litmus test that you're dealing with money laundering and that there's money that's coming from illegal sources. By the way, if there is money laundering coming on, if there is illegal purchasing going on, Let's bring in the law enforcement to take a look at it. I don't think we should just assume that someone who happens to buy in a LLC or a trust is all of a sudden suspect.
So I do want to ask Chuck, are you saying Boston is in jeopardy or Boston is already there in trouble?
We're theorizing about things that we can't know because part of what happens with anonymous ownership is you really don't know what's going on in a property. And David is right. There are legitimate reasons for using some of these ownership structures. But what they did in Miami is interesting. They investigated properties that were acquired by shell corporations with cash. And they actually zeroed in and started to monitor that. And cash transactions dropped by 85% over a year. So what does that tell us? It tells us that in the certain jurisdictions where people are actually keeping an eye on the ball. And again, the Boston Business Journal is calling for this transparency as well. We should be alarmed. See, it's a different market than the 70s and the 80s. It's a different boom than we've lived in the past because global capital, billionaires around the world are moving their money faster and faster, and they're looking for places for safe havens. They're looking to park that money in real property, just like they're buying art and other things. Mm-hmm. And Boston now, because we actually aren't looking at who's owning, we're not monitoring these red flag transactions, is at risk of being one of those illicit fund venues.
So this is where a wonderful thing that David Begelfer is in here, because you have been in this market for almost 30 years. You are retiring, I understand, at the end of the year. And you have seen the city change. 30 years is a long time, and many buildings have gone up and some have disappeared. So have you ever seen, could you ever have imagined seeing a luxury market like this in downtown Boston?
Well, it's been over 40 years, but who's counting?
But who's counting? I'm so sorry. 40 years.
No problem. But it gives a perspective.
You look 50. I don't know how this works.
I've gone through four recessions here. I've seen the cycles that have come and gone, but I've never seen the city and the region look so dynamic and so healthy. It has diverse businesses, industries that are here. We have some of the top leaders of tech and pharmaceutical, biotech, manufacturing. We are really going forward in a time where I've never seen anything quite like this. With this comes challenges. And I have to absolutely agree that one of the greatest challenges we have is the cost of housing in the area. There is absolutely no question about that. The problem we have is, if we stop, for instance, the construction of the high-rise condos, if you will, there isn't an alternative method to be able to produce affordable and middle-income housing.
You're saying that's based on the taxes that come from the sale of these
properties. Right, but now I'm going further and saying that let's say we want to build moderate-income housing. There is no funding. There is no financial sources available that will allow you to do that. Developers would love to be able to build to that market. It is a wide open market, except the problem is with the cost of construction, the problem is that you cannot build them without deep subsidies. And the state is not coming up with them. The federal government is not coming up with it. And locally, there's a limited amount of money there. If we can increase those subsidies, obviously we can produce more.
So, Chuck, when this report came out from the Institute for Policy Studies, it's not that are you lobbying responsibility on top of the developers of these luxury buildings? Or are you saying work with us? Are you saying work with the city in a different way? What are the solutions here, I guess, or what are your recommendations?
Well,
I think developers do what they have to do. They in terms of the market constraints that David is talking about, it is very difficult to create affordable housing in this market. And but I guess I would say that the city, there's more tools that the city could use. I mean, I think fortunately, we have a city that really cares about housing affordability. There is a linkage program. So we build one Dalton Place, a skyscraper, 61 stories, and we get 21 units of affordable housing out of that. Okay, so how many more one Dalton Places are we going to build before we're able to house low and middle income people in Boston? So that's where I'm just not sure the trickle down perspective will work. I would argue there's more we could do. I think we should tax very high end luxury transactions at the city level, maybe at the state level, and dedicate that money to affordable housing.
So spell that out for people who don't have that kind of money.
Well,
tax the buyer?
Tax when a property sells. When a luxury property sells, so in San Francisco, when a property sells, a luxury property, there's a percentage that's taxed off the top. It's paid essentially by the buyer, I suppose. But it goes into an affordable housing fund. Or in the state of Vermont, there's a real estate transfer tax. Goes into conservation for rural land as well as affordable housing. We need to create new revenue streams. And to the extent that there's all this global wealth touching down in Boston, we should ask more for providing the environment, the safety box, if you will, the wealth storage unit security. We should be taxing and asking for more from those property
owners.
So
there are models of this that exist already for agricultural land. For instance, land that gets put aside, it's purchased with this sort of surtax. Is that a fair recommendation?
Well, first of all, instead of taxing at the end, we tack up front. So what happens is, it was correct in stating that in Dalton Place, you have a certain number of units that are set aside. I personally think that's a mistake. I think that those units are, you're giving 20 people or 21 people a lottery to get into a luxury building there in a great part of the Back Bay. If you took that money in instead of units and took that as money and put that into leveraging it into neighborhoods, you could produce probably 100 units, 125 units of moderate income housing. So it's having it right within the building that you are developing. I mean, it's nice to say that, you know, we now have a mixed income within the building. But if you want to produce units, it's better to be able to go into a neighborhood where land costs are less and you're able to be able to build at a lesser cost per square foot.
And actually, I just want to clarify, those units aren't in
Right, that's
Dalton
what I want
Place.
To make sure.
Okay.
Are there units that are affordable middle income units in these buildings?
Some of them are. For instance, in the condominiums that were built at the in
Millennium
Back Bay,
Tower?
Not Millennium Towers, but hotel, but there was a number of units that were built in that place. I think there were 6 units that were built. That could have really been leveraged out to a lot more units.
It's the Mandarin Oriental?
Mandarin, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry for that. But that is a chance to be able to have taken that money and to really to have been able to leverage it out elsewhere. Look, the bottom line here is that it is a challenge, and it's not just a challenge for Boston. It is a challenge, you know, across this country, figuring out how to produce middle-income and moderate-income housing. It is a challenge for us because with a virtually full employment, if we can't attract people from out of state, and we do have them come here, but we lose them in greater numbers than they're coming domestically, if we can't change those numbers and be able to provide housing for more people, workers, we can't increase our economy.
All right, we've got about a minute left. I just want to lay out a couple of things. There is a call by Mayor Marty Walsh for the Treasury Department to add Boston to its list of cities it's watching for the kinds of transactions that are considered laundering of money. Also that there is ongoing efforts to find ways to make and build or provide middle low income housing in the city. The question is, in 30 seconds, you know, are your groups ever going to work together? You've raised the flags. You've put out a report that is provocative because it's making us talk about housing, right? And these buildings are going up and this is the way cities go. Is there any working together?
Well, I think we all want the same thing, to be honest with you, and that's what we want to be able to have more affordable and middle-income housing in Boston. You need to have that to have a healthy city. It needs to have diversity, both economically as well as other, you know, measures. To do that, we're going to have to be able to figure out ways to being able to create this housing. It is unlikely that housing is going to be produced in downtown Boston. But in the suburbs and in the neighborhoods, yes.
Maybe. Then we have transportation issues. Chuck Collins, what's your take on this?
Thousands of units of luxury housing is not going to solve the affordable housing crisis. We need a very different approach. we're not going to build our way out of this by adding luxury housing. We need a different strategy.
All right. Thank you both so much. Chuck Collins from the Institute for Policy Studies, David B. Gelfer, the CEO of the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, NAIOP Massachusetts. Thank you both very much. This is Radio Boston.
Thanks, Jill.
Pleasure to be here.